Hello and welcome to Kayncast, a podcast that provides commentary on the economy and financial markets by the Kayne Anderson Rudnick Investment Management Team.
Hello, this is Ben Falcone, Managing Director with Kayne Anderson Rudnick. And with me today, I have Julie Beal, Chief Market Strategist and Portfolio Manager at Kayne Anderson Rudnick. Welcome back, Julie. Julie, the second quarter saw a strong market move with the S&P rebounding nearly 11% and the Russell 2500 up 8.5% amidst the steepening yield curve. Can you give your views on what drove the market this past quarter? And why do you think momentum has outperformed quality over the past 12 to 18 months?
So the second quarter marked a strong reversal in what we saw in the first quarter and right immediately after post-liberation day, where we saw a really powerful rebound in the S&P, and even the Russell was up almost as much. We saw a steeper yield curve and more enthusiasm. We saw a big decline in volatility if we measure it via the VIX. And we just saw increased investor confidence that things are going to be fine. And what drove that? I think there were two things that caused this. The first is we saw continued confidence and spending in everything related to generative AI. We saw the Magnificent Seven report solid earnings results, as well as maintain their very strong CapEx guidance for continued investment to chase down the opportunity in generative AI. I think that gave investors a lot more confidence that this theme really could continue for the longer term and to continue to pursue companies that support that or that are connected to that. Now, the other thing that we really saw was much calmer rhetoric out of our administration with regards to tariffs. Part of it was seeing Scott Bessent on the news more regularly talking about a measured approach, a thoughtful approach, taking delays, that sort of thing. And I think that that really gave investors some confidence that cooler heads were prevailing and that while tariffs are probably here to stay, they hopefully will not be of the magnitude of what we saw on Liberation Day. So the way that I would describe this rally is a bit of a FOMO rally where many managers feel they have to be invested in this market because it's so strong, but also a relief rally where things are probably not going to be as catastrophic as had been feared, and we can continue to pursue and dive into this market and chase it. Now, part of what we're seeing when we look at the factors driving the market could be anything, right? We could see, you know, growth being a big driver or momentum or beta. And in terms of this period over the last 12 to 18 months, it's really been momentum. And momentum is something that's really driven more so by narrative than by pure earnings growth. And what happens is it not only picks up the FOMO, right? The fear of missing out, but it drives a lot of the algorithmic trading that happens that pursue kind of a signal that's happening in equity markets to keep chasing some of these stocks. Now, it has tended to be a little bit more narrow. It was very narrow last year, and it's still pretty narrow now if we think about the best performing stocks. Quality really hasn't been rewarded over the last 12 to 18 months, I would say. And what was interesting to see is that if we look at the first quarter, quality was a very strong predictor of stock performance. Your better quality stocks held up much better. And so I think it's really important to recognize what's been driving the market and, you know, looking under the hood. Another factor that's been driving the performance of the last 3 months in the second quarter, that was really beta. So your higher beta stocks well outperformed lower beta stocks. We typically at Kayne don't favor higher beta stocks. Ours are ones that are more driven by, you know, strong, durable earnings that don't always tend to be the sexiest things you hear about, but they tend to be able to deliver consistently over time. Now, when you have a momentum rally, it's really important to be able to recognize that momentum is not the same thing as earnings, right? And what happens is when momentum starts to deteriorate, it deteriorates really quickly. I think all the trading around Liberation Day and the big, big declines that we saw should be a lesson to all investors that when momentum is what's driving the market, that can get undone really quickly. It's a real warning for all of us to recognize what's driving the market right now And does that make us vulnerable?
Julie, there seems to be little signs of tariffs having an impact so far on economic data. Do you expect this to change in the back half of this year?
So if we look at a lot of the economic data, we're seeing that the impact of tariffs for the near term hasn't seemed to really show up yet in the economic data. And to us, that makes sense. I think none of us were really expecting to see anything, even in inflation, in the near term, because American companies did a great job of front loading a lot of their inventory and their buying needs early before the tariffs were fully in effect. You even saw companies that had longer dated shipments from China that were held offsite in inventory, and they didn't take delivery of them until the administration lowered tariffs on China. So we have a little bit of this mismatch where a lot of the goods that we would see that are produced over a long period of time, a lot of these goods take 6 months to produce and arrive on our shores. So we have this delay in terms of how that economic data is going to be impacted by tariffs. What I can say is, we've seen a big impact of tariffs already in terms of the revenue that we've been able to generate. It's been stronger than expected. And I think that that's a real indication of a drag, right? Because the right way to think about tariffs is that they are a tax, and they're either being paid by companies that are importers, or they're going to be paid by consumers as prices go up. So it's still a little too early because most of the inventory of things that are being sold are older and don't have tariffs sitting on them. You saw a little bit of this impact in some of the early inflation data just come out this month recently. At the margin, you're seeing small places where clearly prices are going up and businesses are still not totally sure how to price their goods because we don't have really clear tariff legislation, right? We don't have clear agreements. And that's because most trade agreements take 18 to 24 months to put together. What we have right now are some early MOUs. And while we can slap a tariff on pretty much most anything, as we're finding out, the actual trade agreements are the things that create the stability that companies need before they're going to make a big change in their supply chain. So I think what's going to be important to note is as we winnow down the inventory that hasn't been touched by tariffs, we're going to have to see companies making a decision. Are they going to take a margin hit on the new inventory that has been tariffed, or are they going to pass that cost on to consumers? We're going to probably get more information about this in the second quarter earnings period, which has just started and is going to continue through July and parts of August. That will probably give us a little bit more insight on if they're planning to pass through the cost of tariffs or if they're going to take the hit in terms of their margins, but still probably a little early to say. What we also know is that it's going to give us a little bit more insight into how they're adjusting their supply chains to address a lot of the changes that are happening in tariffs. But again, all of this is really difficult for most companies, most consumers, honestly, too, because we just don't have clarity or visibility in terms of what's going to happen. We also don't know how our trading partners are going to respond. So I think it's a big question mark. We'll have more information in the next probably month or two. But to really see the impact in the economic data of tariffs, it's probably a third or fourth quarter phenomenon.
Julie, do you see companies still holding off on capital spending, and do you expect it to continue?
So one question that I think we all have is, what's going to be the impact on CapEx spending as a result of the uncertainty created by tariffs, right? We are not hearing a lot of companies saying that they're going to bring a lot of manufacturing onshore. Some nearshoring, maybe, but most are trying to figure out where in the rest of the world can they take advantage of lower costs. So that's not really, we don't expect a lot of the coming CapEx in the next, call it 12 to 18 to 24 months, to really be companies building in a lot of manufacturing that is a result of the tariffs. But there's still ongoing CapEx that a lot of companies need to be pursuing in terms of expanding their operations, building new warehouses, building more of their data centers. building more stores. This kind of CapEx is pretty central to what is the next leg of economic growth, right? Because you have the economic growth in the near term of building whatever it is you're building, call it a manufacturing facility, a sorting facility. You have that construction impact. And then the asset itself has economic value that it generates over time. So it's twofold. What is interesting to see is that the Fed has now been questioning a lot of CEOs and CFOs. They do it regularly to kind of get a sense of what is business sentiment and what are your CapEx expectations. But part of how they've been asking this question is now related to tariffs. And I think what's notable is that you see two-thirds of companies saying they're either going to hold off on CapEx, they may have even canceled it, or they're going to make it smaller than what they had initially expected. That's pretty meaningful in terms of recognizing the level of uncertainty that we're facing, and in terms of knowing that that is going to have a much longer term impact than just what are near-term profit forecasts, right? Really is important because CapEx is where you see what is the real economic temperature that companies themselves are willing to commit in terms of their optimism for the future. That's how I think of CapEx, because it's all good to say you're worried about the future, but if you're still spending money, chances are you actually feel pretty okay about it. CapEx is where the rubber meets the road. In the near term, I think we really want to be hearing from companies and their guidance for second quarter earnings, what their CapEx plans are. But I remain concerned that the level of uncertainty is causing many companies to say, I'm going to sit on a little bit of a higher cash reserve in the near term, because I'm just not sure actually where to build new facilities.
Julie, can you share your observations on how earnings growth has been so far this year and how estimates have changed, maybe comparing small and mid caps to large caps?
So if we look at earnings this year, I think everyone would say that they have been pretty resilient. We've seen solid growth across industries. There are some notable laggards. Energy would probably be the one that we would all pick on. But what we're seeing is continued trends in terms of earnings growth that we saw in 2024. And I think that's given the market a certain amount of confidence that we can kind of continue to expect and enjoy this modest, but still existing growth that hasn't really been the case in the rest of the world necessarily. Now, if I think about growth more specifically in terms of where we are in large cap, small cap, mid cap, et cetera, it's really been a story where large cap earnings have continued to deliver more robust growth and small cap has tended to underperform. And I think that dynamic is a reflection both of what's in the actual mix of the index. So if I look at large cap, it has a pretty large weight now to technology. Makes sense, right? The Magnificent Seven is found in the S&P 500. If I look at small cap, it's probably half to even less than half the same level of technology. So they're not getting that kind of growth benefit that you see in large cap. There's also a lot more regional banks, real estate, and energy in small cap. And those are all sectors that have been having a much harder time with higher interest rates and weaker growth overall. So that's part of what's really pressuring small cap earnings. They have been improving. And I think the outlook for 2026 is more positive for S&P 600, which is small cap, versus S&P 500, which is large cap. Makes sense, right? Large cap is finding that it's harder and harder to grow when you have already put up good numbers. Small cap is able to grow after a smaller base, after a lower base. And, you know, mid cap is kind of in between. What I think is interesting and notable is that if we pull out the Magnificent Seven from S&P 500 earnings, you recognize that large cap is growing, but it's not growing nearly as fast as what's happening in tech. And so that's really pulling up the growth in large cap. It's driving a lot of that expansion and stock market price appreciation. You see that too in valuations. Valuations are much richer for large cap than they are for small cap. And I think it's important to note that small cap In addition to having that level of lower growth, that valuation gap is pretty substantial. If we pull out the Magnificent Seven, large cap stocks look expensive on a relative basis, but not as expensive, a little bit more reasonable. So I think it's important to kind of recognize the mix and what's happening within the indices themselves. It is an unusual time period where, again, we're narrow a little bit like we were in 2024, with a select group being very large, earning a lot, and growing quickly. It does skew the results of those numbers.
Julie, lastly, large cap performance has again outpaced small and mid cap so far. What will it take for a sustained rally in the small mid cap space going forward?
So again, we've seen more price appreciation in large cap than we have in small and mid caps. And I think if you look at earnings growth, return on equity, and even the credit quality of large cap, to me, it makes sense that this is the place where we're seeing more sustained outperformance from a stock market standpoint. Investors are going where the earnings growth is. Now, when we ask, what will it take for a more sustained rally in small and mid cap? I think what the real question is a recognition that those businesses that make up the small cap index, they are ones that have been struggling more economically. Again, this is this mix issue that we were talking about before in terms of earnings. And so I think what drives the more sustained rally in this space is from a sentiment standpoint, if people think that the economy is doing okay and that it's going to be able to weather through the challenges that it faces in terms of tariffs and higher inflation, then the valuations that we see in small caps look pretty attractive. If we believe that the growth forecasts that are out there on small cap can be achieved, then it would make sense to allocate more to small cap because the growth is better there and the valuations are certainly much more attractive than those of large cap. I think the other overhang for small cap is that people are very convinced that this space cannot rally until we have interest rate cuts. And I think that makes sense to a certain extent. There is more debt in the small and mid-cap space that's variable, and so they would be beneficiaries of lower interest rates. That would help them. But I think that it's also important to recognize that you can find many of these higher quality businesses that don't have a lot of debt, that haven't been negatively impacted by interest rates, and that are putting up better, more resilient growth. You know, they just happen to be smaller businesses, and they have tended to be painted all with the same broad brushstrokes, pretty low valuations, pretty attractive fishing grounds right now, if you're a quality investor that's focused on this space. But when people ask me, what's it going to take for a sustained rally in the small and mid-cap space? I think it's a combination of factors. Part of it is just the confidence that the earnings growth is really going to materialize. I think that's the most important driver. And nobody can really predict the timing of it, right? We don't put a lot of stock in earnings estimates going forward because it's just really difficult to predict a lot of these factors and outcomes. But, you know, a real resurgence in small cap earnings growth has been predicted for, I don't know, 5 or 6 quarters. And it really hasn't materialized in a way that makes investors feel really confident. The thing is that it's not a space you really want to ignore because when it happens really quickly. So I think small and mid cap is part of a balanced diet of any investor, right? You want the diversification. It's nice to have more exposure to US that you get in small and mid cap. But I think that most importantly is that that space is more attractively priced and that reversion in valuations can happen really quickly. So I think that really, it bodes well for investors who want some exposure to quality, to focus on quality, roll up your sleeves. You can find them. They're good businesses in small and mid-cap land. And give yourself that exposure away from large cap, which is pretty crowded. And certainly, it's hard to really see how much further valuations can stretch from here.
Julie, as always, thanks for taking the time to provide your insight to our Canecast listeners.
You've just listened to Canecast. Subscribe to our podcast on iTunes or Spotify. For more of our investing insights, head over to our website, www.cane.com. Canecast is the official podcast series of Cane Anderson Rudnick Investment Management, CAR. This material is provided as a matter of general information and is not intended to be relied upon as a forecast or research. The opinions expressed herein are those of the speakers and are not necessarily the opinions of Carr or its affiliates, are current as of the date and time of the recording, and are subject to change at any time due to changes in market or economic conditions. The information and opinions contained in this material are derived from proprietary and non-proprietary sources deemed by Carr to be reliable and are not necessarily all-inclusive. Carr does not guarantee the accuracy or completeness of this information. This communication should not be construed as an offer or solicitation to purchase or sell any security. Individuals should consult with a qualified financial professional before making any investment decisions. Reliance upon information in this material is at the sole discretion of the listener. To the extent any performance is discussed, past performance is not indicative of future results.